good evening, and welcome to the Super License F1 podcast. I'm Rodney.
I'm Zach.
Zach's got a big smile on his face, as I can see.
I can definitely guarantee that you can't see me.
And how many fingers am I holding up?
12.
12, yeah, that's right.
Woohoo!
That's because everyone knows that 12 is a lucky number in Japan, and we're at the Japanese Grand Prix this weekend.
We are, and I'm so excited to talk about it, Rod.
It may be false, but it's a good segue.
Yeah, let's jump right into it. Yes,
let's jump right into it. I've got a little bit of news. Do you want to go through some news?
Yep, let's go to the news first.
The first bit of news I've got, everyone was talking about this. It was actually kind of a big deal on the F1 paddock this weekend, was the passing away of Maria Di Villotta. Do you know much about this woman?
I don't know too much about this woman. I know that she has quite the fetching eye patch.
She had the coolest eye patch in the world, maybe just in F1 or in the F1 world.
She had the coolest current eye patch.
Yeah, that's true. So
she looks like she's from a different age or from the future.
Oh, she does look like from the future, like an F1 pirate come back to the present to protect us from something.
Oh man, that's a movie right there.
Well, we should
call Ron Howard.
She was the daughter of driver Emilio Di Villotta, and she was one of the other women that were knocking on the door of F1, along with like Susie Wolfs.
Yeah,
she signed with Marussia last year to be a test driver. In her first test drive, she had a big crash. Suffered a lot of head injuries, lost her eye, but, I mean, it's pros and cons, I guess. She got that cool eye patch, but sadly lost her eye. And then, just this week, sadly lost her life, supposedly as a result of injuries from that crash. So, it's really something that's hit the F1 paddock pretty hard. Everybody's been talking about it. A lot of the drivers have little stars on their helmets to say, you know, we're really, really, we're sad that this happened. But it's notable.
It's definitely notable. It's always sad that, look, it's nice to see that side of Formula One from the community, as we've spoken about earlier in other episodes, but obviously we're always sad to see someone who's part of the Formula One family leave us, especially a big personality, as I've learnt in recent days. So
yeah, that's right,
very sad.
She was actually in Spain launch her autobiography. So I mean, it's a sad way to get attention brought up to her autobiography, but I'd be pretty interested to read it.
Yeah, definitely, same here.
She comes from a great, great racing pedigree, good stock. And
exactly.
It's just a shame that her career was cut so short, that's all.
That's right.
But let's move on to some more happier news, maybe. We've got...
Yes, definitely.
What have we got? We've got Hülkenberg. So Hülkenberg came out and said, I'd kind of like to know by the end of maybe October who I'm going to be racing for. And the rumours are flying thick and fast.
Yeah, who's firming as the number one choice?
I mean, everybody's looking at each other going, it's Lotus, right? It's got to be Lotus.
except for
that the young man of Formula One, Eddie Jordan, he's come out saying, no, it's 100%. It's Force India. There's no doubt about it. Force India all the way. Do you believe that?
No.
I don't believe it is. He's crazy, right?
What a sideways move. He's doing better at Sauber than he would at Force India.
I know. I mean, Eddie Jordan was right last year when he said that Hamilton would go to Mercedes, but I just don't trust him. Like, he's too flamboyant to be trustworthy somehow. He's like a magician.
Exactly.
Like, this is some setup for a trick.
It's all smoke and mirrors.
Yeah, that's
You can imagine Eddie Jordan would be closer to Hamilton and Mercedes. Martin Brundle said during the telecast of the race that he knows exactly where Hülkenberg is going and that the deal is signed. He just can't say where.
Yeah, but that's what you say when you don't actually know.
Well, that's what I've been saying for weeks.
I mean, I know, but why should I tell you if you don't know?
Exactly. So, look, I hope to God it's Renault. If I was Romain Grosjean, I'd be scared that it was Renault because I'd be like, man, I don't need a really talented driver here to
Well, that's
going to
be a great team, I reckon, next year.
It would be, if everything's correct. So, let's hope he goes for it.
Let's hope so. The other thing that's going to happen if he moves teams is that that'll be one more driver that's incorrect on my copy of F1 2013, which I got the other day. So I've been driving that, and it's a little bit sad when you drive against Ricciardo or your Kimis, and they're all switching teams next year, but it's a pretty fun little game, because you've got last year's version, right?
Yeah, but before can they just push an update next year? They'd be like, hey, we put everybody in their correct teams.
There is an update. It just costs $89.95, and you buy a new disc.
And you get 14 at the end.
That's right. That's your update. I really like it. I think in the past, I've always seen these games as being too simulatory. I always liked more fun games that you could just pick up and play. You don't need to spend 4 hours you know, getting them right before you can play. But I'm enjoying it. I think it's really fun. The retro racing is really, really fun.
Really? How come?
So, because the cars are set up differently, they have different grip levels.
Ah.
And for some reason, they just feel more like a game. So when you're driving the current current teams on the current tracks, there's so much, like, it's so much at stake. It feels real. But when you're driving in the 80s, when you're driving on, like, Jerez or Brands Hatch or something, it's like, oh, this is fun. This is a game. And the car's sliding, you know, sideways anyway. So it just feels more gamey. But I really like that kind of racing anyway.
More arcadey.
More arcadey. You got it. But the other game that came out, which I didn't even know anything about, but Codemasters pushed out an iPhone game as well, a little F1 iPhone game.
Really? I know.
So,
what?
Me either. It just popped up in my F1 newsfeed, and I downloaded it. It was about $3. And it's like, kind of like, you know, it's top-down like Slingshot Racing is, but with little challenges, a bit more like real racing, where it's a challenge like overtake that guy before the end of the lap or whatever. So it's pretty fun. I've been enjoying it, but certainly not up there with your Sims, that's all.
Is it pick of the week?
Oh, look, I mean, I'd say it's my iPhone pick of the week. Why not? I mean, I didn't get a code or anything from them, and I don't
well,
have
it's funny because they're the code masters, so you expect them to give you a code.
They kept them all for themselves. You didn't get to be master by giving away all your code.
Oh, those bastards.
That's all the news that I have that's fit to print. Do you have anything else you want to add?
No, look, we've been talking heaps about the drivers moving around, so I think that let's cap it. Let's go to the race.
Yeah, you got it.
Yeah.
So we can get into the race, I reckon, by starting with our predictions. I had young Nico Rosberg for pole. You had young Sebastian Vettel for pole. Now what happens, Zach, for pole?
Well, there was a certain, you know, some may even call him an elderly Australian who just popped up and remembered that he was just as good as anybody else on the track. So why the hell couldn't he take pole? And he just stepped up and took it by two tenths of a second.
Yeah, he just decided to remind us all that he comes from a land down under.
Yeah, a land down under 1:43 or whatever it was.
Under 1:30, that's for sure. No, I think they showed a replay of Sebastian Vettel locking up, and they were like, ooh, is this the lockup that cost him pole? But I don't like to think about it like that. Mark got the job done, so he deserves pole, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Screws up our predictions, though. So we both got it wrong. You had Vettel,
it's
which was closer.
It's sad when that happens, right? It's sad when pole is wrong, and you're just like, well, throw my hands in the air.
Throw it all out. We all thought we were so good going Vettel for pole, Vettel for win, but no one got it even close.
Yeah, so thanks, Mark.
We all picked Vettel for win, which is, you know, that's a bit of a wash. Yeah. I had Button for 10th, and you had Gutierrez for 10th. So Button came 9th.
And he was looking so good for 10th.
Everybody was. At some stage, they were all 10th.
Yeah.
So you were pretty close for pole. We both got the win. I was pretty close for 10th. I reckon it's almost like a dead heat.
I reckon, look, I'm going to call it and say that you won because your 10th was really close.
No, but, well, okay. I'm not going to argue. Suffice to say that I wasn't going to go so generous, but that's okay.
Yeah, it's fine. I'm confident, like the Red Bulls were this weekend. I'm just going to let you take a lead for a little bit, and I'll get you on the last 5 laps. Don't worry.
Oh, you absolutely will. There's no doubt about that. So, yeah, the result was Weber took pole. Vettel took the P1. Weber took P2. Grosjean took P3. Massa ended up the man in P10. So,
yeah, so like him.
So like him. And so like all our followers, our brilliant super fans who put in predictions. So I've just got a couple here that I'm going to read through.
Go for it.
We had Mikey97, who, like me, predicted Rosberg to win, to pole. And he said he was going to have a really good race and win, which he didn't. And he said the Perez would come 10th. So he was around 15th. He was back down there.
Yeah. And look, it was all touch and go down there. So, as you said, it could have been anyone.
It was a scramble down there. We'll get to that later. We had at Canberra Mel, and I think at Canberra Mel's predicted once before maybe, but she said that Hamilton would take pole. She said that Vettel would win, ding, 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 and she had Ricciardo for 10th. He came 13th. So he was there and thereabouts as well.
Yeah. I think we're honing in on our 10ths, like us as a super licensed community.
We're so close. It's like the bullseye. We keep getting the red one, the black one, but someone needs to get the red one.
Yeah, by this time next year, everybody will be getting their predictions for 10th spot on every week.
Oh, every week. We had our mate at Awesome Commando. He went for Vettel for pole, Vettel for win, and Maldonado for 16th. So I reckon that's 10th. A bit of a... Oh, for 10th. For 10th, he came 16th. I've got 16th on my screen. I'm just reading it because I'm tired.
Yeah,
he went for Maldonado for 10th, but he came 16th. So, I mean, I think that's a bit of a bold move. I think he was, like, hoping that Maldonado would maybe snatch a few there.
Look, I think, like me, he just wanted to go for somebody who wasn't, like, Jev or DiResta or Sutil. Like, he just needed someone else in the mix.
I mean, we'll keep going through the predictions, but as you can see, we covered nearly everybody. We had at Marty Mayer went for Vettel for pole, Vettel for win, and Perez for 10th, and he came 15th.
Yeah.
And then we had John at Momomoto, who had Vettel for pole, Vettel for win, and Sutil for 14th. For 10th. He came 14th. I'm going to keep doing that every time.
That's perfectly fine. We all understand how dyslexic you are.
Yeah. And then we had at Ian Thompson, 08. He had Vettel for pole, Vettel for win, Ricciardo for 10th, so he came 13th. At least he got Vettel right.
Yeah, exactly.
And last but not least, we had at Roars. So he had Vettel for pole, he had Vettel to win, and he had Massa for 10th. And now he nailed it because Massa did come 10th.
Oh, man. Yeah,
and
Massa
for a minute there, I read Vettel, Massa. I went, oh, he got all three. But then I forgot that Webber had pole. I just totally forgot.
So, Roars, send your angry letters to m.webber at redbullracing.com and say, you're the reason I'm not getting any merchandise.
Yeah, hashtag Seb's bitch.
Yeah, Seb's a bit. Oh, man.
Well, I mean, so close. I mean, I think,
is that the first time someone's gotten 10th?
Oh, it probably is, you know.
Like, that is a big commendation for guessing 10th.
Yeah, for sure. That's like a triple 20. That's like a 4, but it bounced like a meter before the rope.
Yeah, I don't know how you even picked Massa as well. Like, that, you've got a crystal ball. Like,
how and why?
Exactly.
So well done, everybody. Okay. Thanks for your predictions, and I'm sure you'll do better next week when Vettel takes pole. But it's time to just launch off the start line straight into the race, Zach.
Oh, I know a man who launched right off the start line and surprised us all.
Yeah, Gutierrez, right?
No, he's a man called Romain Grosjean. Have you heard of this guy?
Oh, that guy. I've seen that guy.
Yeah, he's usually the guy who flies off the line and then crashes into whoever's in front of him.
Yeah, there was only one car ahead of him, and he just managed to swerve.
We all say that what a great move at the start, but all he did was go, oh, now I know this part. You move to the right or the left, one of them, and then you hold your breath.
I think he was doing it with his eyes closed, just to make sure.
Exactly.
But yeah, Vettel was starting from P2, obviously, and Grosjean was right behind him, just floored it, and bang, you're P1 by the first corner. Well done.
It was crazy. He was crazy brave. He went at the right side.
Yeah.
And by that, I mean the correct side. But did you see when they replayed from his pit camera, his cockpit camera, I get that wrong every time, fucking hell, every
week. His
onboard
camera?
His onboard camera is what I'm going to say from now on. He hit 260 before that first corner.
Whoa, is that good?
That's really quick.
Oh, okay. Like,
well, I mean, with that kind of start, and it's not like it's a really long straight to the first corner. I mean, it's sizable, but it's not huge. Like, that's really quick, and he braked perfectly and went around. That's some really skilled driving from a guy who we usually see at the back of somebody else.
He absolutely nailed it. There's no doubt about it. Everyone's been giving him mad props this weekend because, he was leading after the first corner. He was leading for, like, the majority of the race, right?
Yeah. And, I mean, he was always going to be a little bit of a sitting duck. But then when you scan down the results and you try and find Kimi down in fifth, you sort of go, well, where was his pace?
I know he wasn't really challenging, but everyone was like, oh, well done, Grosjean. You did so much better than Kimi. I mean, he came fifth, and Grosjean was only third. He's still there.
Oh, yeah. He's definitely there or thereabouts, right?
Yeah. So the
much
other thing
like
about
our
the
predictions.
By which I mean, not so great.
Yes.
The other thing about the start, I reckon, was that Hamilton tried to cut in between Webber and Vettel, ran straight over Vettel's front wing, got a big puncture in his rear tyre. He was last after the first lap, and then he had to retire after that. So,
yeah,
I mean,
not great.
I wish I could say I felt bad for him, but I just can't.
Look, it's annoying as a fan because you go, oh, okay, well, there was a gap there, and he took it. It just wasn't quite right, and it was a very basic. It seemed like no one was really angry at anybody because it was just a standard racing, not incident, but a racing thing that happened.
Yeah. I mean, he was saying, oh, it was so disappointing because it was the best start I've made all year. I was like, what, the best 10 meters start that you've made before you ran into somebody? Is that the best start you've made?
Yeah, exactly.
Beg to differ.
Those first two gears, brilliant.
Mm.
Somehow
Vettel, he must have had a little bit of damage on his front wing, but somehow he still had amazing pace. And so it was Grosjean and Webber and Vettel for the first part of the Grand Prix.
And it was the first time we've seen in really ages that the DRS gets turned on. And things that can actually happen are happening.
Yeah, so as soon as it did get turned on, I got Ricciardo overtook Button and Raikkonen overtook Bottas.
Yeah,
so
that was in the same straight, like at the same time.
Yeah, they were just
sitting
there like, you guys can overtake now. They're like, thanks, we'll do that.
And it's good. I think that, like, if we're going to talk about that just quickly, that on the Australian broadcast, Alan Jones was saying, why the hell have they made the DRS on that side, on the short straight, not on the long one? It's the perfect, that straight should be the textbook example of how DRS should work.
Yeah.
Because it's the perfect length, it's the perfect speed, and you really got to get your exit into that straight perfect and get right up behind someone in order to make it happen. So,
it's the perfect length, it's the perfect speed, it's the perfect exit. It's all sounding a little bit phallic.
Only you would see that. All the rest of our listeners are paying attention to the Formula One news, and you're sitting having sex dreams. Come on now.
So there was another first lap incident. The first lap or two was so action-packed, but we had Max Chilton and GVDG go off the track. They slammed into each other. GVDG slammed into the wall. It was a big shunt, and it was an exciting start already, so he just made it that little bit more spectacular. And then later in the race, he was tweeting photos, like, oh, look how hard I slammed into that wall. That was horrific.
I didn't see that. To him. That's awesome.
Pretty good to him. And I think the team retweeted it as well. Like, can you believe this guy just slammed into the wall? And now he's like, whoa, that doesn't look so good. I hate to be that guy. Well done to him.
I think there's maybe a Twitter target we could go after. We should be tweeting at him more. Maybe he'll become our first big get for the podcast.
I gotta say, for a guy who comes, you know, second last to last every Grand Prix, he has like tons and tons of fan clubs and followers on Twitter and stuff. Like, for someone who should be a nobody, he's got quite a following.
Yeah, I think that as Formula One's involvement in social networking and all those types of things, like that access to these big personalities makes it so easy for you to get involved in lower teams. Especially because it's pretty boring at the front, you know, a lot of this year. Get involved in your countrymen and the lower down teams. But the one thing I hate about off the start when guys right at the back have issues is that I miss them because I'm watching the front and they go around the corner and I'm looking and then, you know, they cut back and there's two cars in all this dust and I didn't even see what happened. I still really haven't seen what happened. If only I had the power of the internet to somehow check replays.
Yeah, you need to get on Reddit to that guy who posts all the GIFs.
Oh, really?
He just picks out like the 20 most interesting things and makes a GIF of them and posts them. It's really handy.
Oh, you should send me a link to that.
Oh, or maybe later. Or maybe I'll post some in the show notes.
Yeah, thanks for the help. One
of the gifts that you'll see if you check out this guy is the unsafe release from the pits that... who was it? Nico Rosberg?
I've got it. It's Rosberg in front of Perez. So yeah. Perez was coming into the pits, coming into his box, just as Rosberg pulled out of the box. And it was a terrible release.
I think so too.
And as the commentators said, it's not Rosberg's fault that he got released. Why does he have to pay the penalty?
That's always the way, though, right? I mean, the driver just gets told to go, so he goes. That's all there is to it.
Yeah. So it's times like that that you go, wow, this really is a team sport, that he gets penalised for everybody else's muck-up.
Yeah. And I think we've talked about this before, but the whole problem stems from the fact that they don't go through their single file. They let them go through two at a time. So they release Rosberg thinking he'll either get in front or they can just drive side by side. But, of course, they can't drive side by side because Perez has to pull into the pit.
Yeah, so, Perez had to basically stop.
It would be fine if they looked at the car, recognized that it was someone who is further down the pit lane and had already stopped, and then let him out. That would be one thing. But, I mean, their garage is only one or two pits down, so why don't they know? Like, if it was a Ferrari or a Red Bull or whoever's in front of you, you know that they're going to have to pull into the pit. So you just stop your car. You just don't put them out. I don't understand why we keep having this problem.
That's right. You'd think that every pit crew would know exactly what to do by now. You reckon it'd be possible in the future just to take it out of the team's hands? That they put lights on the pit stops and it's like, nope, there's somebody else in the pit lane. Can't go until they're in their box.
Yeah, why not? How hard could that be?
Exactly. How hard could that be? How hard? Super license, once again, solving the problem.
That's what I mean. We're here to help. What else have you got from the race? What's next? I got
my next highlight. Obviously, there was the drive-through penalty for that. So that sucked for Rosberg. But he still did okay for considering it had a drive-through. But... Oh, yeah. The next thing I had was Ricciardo defending against Hülkenberg at lap 20, considering he was on much worse tyres. Okay. Hadn't stopped yet. Hülkenberg had fresh tyres.
Oh, this is when he was holding up like three or four cars behind him.
Yeah, but Hülkenberg was really coming hard at him.
Oh, yeah.
And
he was definitely coming hard at him. He wanted to pound it in there, but he just couldn't get it in. Is that what you're trying to say?
You couldn't find the right slot is really what the problem was.
What's wrong with us tonight?
What's wrong with us? What's wrong with you? Don't drag me into the gutter with you. It's nothing to do with me, mate.
Fair enough.
No, it's good to see that Ricciardo's got that part of his game. We've seen it a couple of times this year at Monza as well, that he doesn't need to use all his curves all the time to drive a great lap. And he's on the wrong tyres. He was the only guy to start on the hard tyre, not the soft tyre. Just his ability to just go, you know what, I'm going to defend fairly, I'm going to put the car in the right spot, and I'm going to open the door halfway and slam it in front of you just for fun. Because he's obviously... the other thing I wanted to say is that I think that they're putting him on these weird strategies to put him up the front. Like, they made him run really, really, really long on a two-stopper just to get him up the front in front of people and fighting it out with the big guys.
That's definitely their plan, is to put him on the option tyre and run him long. Mm-hmm. No, yeah, put him on the prime tyre and run him long. Yeah. Where everyone else is starting on the options trying to maintain positions, he's like, I don't need to worry because you're all going to pit anyway.
Exactly. And I don't need to worry because we're going to Red Bull next year. So
I don't need to worry. So see you guys later.
Yeah, so I'll just get some practice doing all this defensive stuff because that's something we're doing next year because I'll be at the front.
Yeah, that's true. And he'll probably still be defending against Hülkenberg wherever he goes because that guy, that kid's going to be up the front somewhere.
That kid can race.
So, I mean, did you notice with Vettel this weekend how many times he was locking up? He seemed to be locking up everywhere. And they were kind of commenting, like, that's not, like, him. What's he doing? But, yeah, he's locking it up like he was Lewis Hamilton or something. He's just locking up all the time.
I think the nerves, I think the commentator said this, that Schumacher used to get a little bit like this when he was getting close to a championship, just sort of the pressure was off a little bit and concentration might go down. I think that Vettel is a real motivated guy, and maybe as the pressure kind of releases, because he's going to, he only has to come fifth or higher from any race from now on and he'll win the championship. Like, that's not hard. I can do that in that Red Bull car. My grandmother could do that in that Red Bull car. So maybe he just wasn't as laser focused this week.
I think he just didn't have a very smooth race, and he probably hasn't had one of those for the last 4 years, really. So we definitely saw, I mean, there was different strategies playing out. We had still had Grosjean and Weber and Vettel up the front, but they sent a message out to Vettel saying, hey, don't worry about what Mark's doing because you are racing Grosjean. And I took that to mean, oh, Weber's going to win. And it's up to these two for who's going to get second. But the way Weber's strategy worked out, they decided to three-stop him instead of two. And it kind of turned out to just be one stop too many. He couldn't really make that second stint work. And in the end of the race, when he had the stop, he fell from first to third and got ahead of Grosjean to take P2, but couldn't really, you know, I mean, we didn't really get the thrilling finish that we were sort of hoping for with Weber challenging Vettel for the lead, then telling him, hey, Mark, please stay away from him, and him going like, yeah, right, fuck you. And just trying
not
to
do that.
Yeah, as if he's going to do that. And Vettel was, I mean, you were talking about how he might have been a bit nervous. Vettel was radioing back to the pit saying, you know, if Mark catches up to me, you guys have got to keep him off me, like keep him away from me. You guys have got to protect me from him. I was like, what a coward. What a chicken.
What a dick move, right?
Like, I mean, it would be one thing to say, look, I've disobeyed team orders, but now you guys have to protect me from him. That would be one thing. But then to also say, you know, he's probably not going to obey orders anyway. So what is there for you to gain by asking them?
Yeah. It just, he sounded like a whingy child.
And absolutely.
And I wonder, like, it just doesn't bode well. Like, if you're Daniel Ricciardo, you're sitting there going like, really, mate? I want to be right up there fighting it with you every week.
That's exactly right.
And you're just going to whinge to the garage and be like, hey, I'm going to win the championship. Tell him to go away. I'm going to take my ball and go home.
He wasn't going to win it this weekend anyway. So I don't really understand what he thought he was going to get out of that. But I really wanted to see.
Maybe he was really, really stressed.
Yeah. And then there's obviously, I mean, Mark Webber's, you know, his career has been plagued by two things. One, incredible bad luck. But number two, conspiracies. And this weekend, the conspiracy was, how come in the middle of the race, when Mark was setting fastest laps, why did they say, no, your tyres are gone, you have to pit, and put him on a three-stop strategy? Why didn't they just let him go? So I don't really buy into any of that. I think they decided after the first 11 laps or after the first pit stop, they were going to three-stop. They just stuck to the strategy. I don't think for a second that they were going to risk Mark coming third when he was in the lead. I just don't think.
No, it's just not a thing. I mean, there was heaps of it on Twitter post-race saying, you know, he was setting those purple laps for himself and he had all the pace. But they obviously found him a slot. They found him some clean air for him to go right into. That was they run those race simulators the whole time and they know exactly where to put them.
And they
especially
do conserve,
when you're at the front.
They do conserve the tyres. And right before the pit, they do say, hey, light it up because we're going to take those tyres off anyway. And it's not that uncommon to see drivers set fastest laps and then pull in for tyres.
Exactly. And look, he can't have been doing that well because when they put him on fresh tyres and he needed to really nail it, like really, really, really build, like really absolutely smash it.
Really?
He didn't quite have it.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Completely. Obviously, Rod. He just obviously didn't have it.
Yeah. So his final pit was 10 laps before the end. He got onto the back of Grosjean pretty quickly, but he needed to clear Grosjean to have any chance of getting up to Vettel straight away, and he couldn't really get it done. He got it done eventually. I don't think he can say that he wasn't fast enough, But he just seemed to struggle. There was something with his DRS as well not opening. I never found out whether that was a fault or...
I think that only happened once, right?
Well, I think once or twice, but...
Oh, okay, sure.
Certainly he was following him for three or four laps, and it ruined, you know, his chance of victory, that's all.
Look, I think they thought that he was going to come out probably 2 seconds a lap faster than Grosjean and Vettel. Yeah. And he was only about 0.9 of a second faster, looking at the timing boards. So he just didn't... Like, he caught up to Roman quickly, like, within four laps. But he really needed to be on him in, like, two laps and then get by him on the next lap. So he just couldn't make it stick. And we're his biggest fans. Like, there was nobody in Australia cheering as hard as I was for him. But to say that it's a Red Bull conspiracy... It's a bit rich. I think it's done.
I think no matter what went down with those two drivers, I think no matter what's happening with Webber leaving the team next year, there's no way they would sacrifice a potential 1 and 2 for a 1 and 3. There's just no way. That's not the team they are.
Exactly. And we know for a fact that they've told Vettel in the past to let Mark Webber win, and he had to disobey team orders to take the win from Mark. So I think that was put to bed ages ago, that they're not on Mark's side. So
there's still four races to go. I mean, it's frustrating that Mark only has four races left, and I'd really like him to win one. Just even if it's one out of the next four, I really want to see him win one. I know Vettel owes him one, but I'm absolutely not expecting him to pull over and give it to him. Mark's going to have to get it done on the track.
Even if the championship is finished? So if the championship's done, you reckon Interlagos...
No.
Vettel just goes, hey, mate, he's one final gesture. No. That'd be
because
so good for Vettel's
what's
image.
In it for him? I mean, if he was going to drive next year and stay his teammate, maybe, but Mark's leaving, so there's even less of an incentive for Vettel to let him have one.
But surely Vettel's proud enough or arrogant enough that he wants some people to be on his side.
No,
you reckon? Okay.
No, and Alonso has just set the record this weekend for most F1 points, career points ever, out of anybody. So I think that Vettel's still got 10 years of racing in him, you know, theoretically. He's only like 24 or something, 26. So, I mean, I think he will have all of those little trophies and little achievements in the back of his mind. Every 10 points will count. So he's not going to let Webber have anything. The other guy who didn't let anybody have anything was Daniel Ricciardo. So he gave it his all when he was following Adrian Sutil around a corner.
Oh, man. Such a good overtake, right?
It was a really good overtake. But then he ran off the track and got a penalty for holding his position even though he left the track. So what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think... At the time, I was like, come on, he completed the move. Surely that's okay. If anything, he'd be at a disadvantage, right? But then thinking back on it, like, you can't use outside of the track to complete a move. Yeah. And Daniel made a mistake. Daniel didn't time his overtake enough, and he braked too late to make that corner.
Yeah, he braked too late. Yeah.
So if you can't make the corner, you can't keep that position. So what he should have done immediately is given the position back.
Yeah, he should have.
You wouldn't come through to think that. So, it was a great bit of driving, followed by less great driving.
He definitely, it's a big sweeping left-handed corner. He definitely broke too late and tried to give himself every chance of flying around the outside. And he went off the track on the outside of the corner. So the fact that he went off the track while there was still the corner wasn't even finished, you know. I think that really went against him. And the fact that it was the same movement. Sure, his car was in front of the other car, but in that same movement, he also just went straight off the track. So you can't argue that that wasn't part of his overtake.
Yeah, exactly.
I thought it was cut and dry.
If you overshoot a corner, and like if it was at Monaco and you overshot a corner and you drove through the chicane, then you would have to give the position back. And that's just what he's done on the other side. We just don't usually see someone complete a move after going off the track. Like that, onto grass.
He was really, really upset in the car. He was super upset when he got out of the car. He was threatening to kill somebody. And he said in an interview that they talk about it every single week at the driver's conference about penalties, leaving the track, when you can overtake and shutting the door and all that stuff. And he said it's so inconsistent. That's what's frustrating about it. I agree that it's been inconsistent. There's no doubt about that. But I just think in this case, you got it wrong and you just should have served your penalty and shut up.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry, Dan, but you were wrong in this case.
Bad luck. That's the one time in your whole life that we'll say that to you.
That's exactly right.
Next thing I had was my favorite quote, radio quote. Yeah. And I know it's to do with Sebastian Vettel, but I like seeing this from his race engineer. When they finally let Vettel go and he goes, "That's Grosjean up the road. Go get him."
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's so...
It gets the blood pumping.
It does. I mean, regardless of that it's Vettel, like any Formula One driver, that's exactly what they want to hear. And that's so exciting because you're just like, he's been completely let off the leash. He's going to drive he's going to drive crazy. And he did. Yeah. He got him so quickly. It was so good.
Yeah, got past him like a pro.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the most upsetting thing is he drove really, really, really well. Like, he drove to the race plan. He overtook when he needed to. He was really excited afterwards because he knew he drove really well. But he was also a real dick during the race. So,
yeah,
come on,
I
man.
Did you see the footage when they showed the pit garage when Vettel overtook Grosjean, and then they cut back to the pits again when Webber overtook Grosjean? And it seemed like when Webber made his move, the pit garage was just that little bit more fierce in their celebration. They were just that little bit more, yes, come on, we got it done.
Yeah, exactly.
And I really think that they maybe they felt self-conscious, like, oh, maybe we did stuff up his pits accidentally, or they were just pleased for Webber to get up there. I don't know, but I really felt like they were on Webber's side a bit more.
Definitely, and I think that, well, there's probably a little bit of that they just want. They feel like Webber probably's owed his dues a little bit, but Webber's just so well liked across the world. You know, we saw it on the podium afterwards, and I'm sure we'll get to it. But
yeah,
you know,
cheers. I was going to launch into that, but I didn't actually hear it, but I read this somewhere that apparently Eddie Jordan, the first thing he said to Vettel was, "Hey, I heard that when you got out of the car, you had an itchy bum."
What?
Did you hear that? He said, apparently he said, "Hey, I heard you had an itchy bum when you got out of the car." I don't know.
That's so weird.
I have no idea what's going on with that. He is super weird.
He's just so weird.
Like, why would you say that? Like, you know that microphone's turned on, right? You're talking to like 10 billion people.
Oh, God. I did want to say, I have got my last note on Mark in my Japan notes, was that can't go unnoticed that his move on Grosjean was really cool.
Yeah.
Just sticking it up up the inside, on the right side, sorry. And keep just talking. Like, he's like, you're going to run out of track. The corner's coming up really close. And he was just like, he knew that if he didn't make it there, he wasn't going to make it.
Yeah.
And he just put it right there and was brave and showed some real Aussie grit.
You could say. He's the old man of Formula One now, and he's pulled that move a dozen times.
Yeah,
it's situations like that where he really shows his experience and his quality.
It's also a great testament to Suzuka that there's just so many overtaking areas. You've got the great DRS zone. There's the chicane that you can overtake. You can overtake into, what's that corner called? R31.
Yeah.
You know, you can hold it flat through there and be brave, and you'll get your overtakes. So it really rewards positive driving, and we've seen in the past. You know, Kobayashi has put it up the inside of that. I suppose it's a hairpin, just, you know, every time. And if you get your lines right, and if you've got the right traction and the right, you know, right speed coming out of the corner, you can take anyone, regardless of which team they're with. And
I think that
it showed Hülkenberg's ability in front of Alonso. He basically kept Alonso behind him almost, you know, for most of the race until he finally got him on that 45. But, you know, that no one of the drivers loved the track because it gives everything to everybody.
Yeah, and as opposed to Korea, fantastic fans at Japan in the Suzuka. Everyone was making a big deal about how they just stayed in the grandstands. Even when it got really dark, they were just sitting there watching all the cars get packed up and put away.
Yeah.
And so polite. No booing.
No booing. Yeah. Even though everybody really wanted to boo him.
But they were just too ashamed.
Yeah. Too ashamed. We just mentioned finally as well, before we move on to just the podium stuff, is that a big congratulations from Superlicense to both Saubers getting in the points.
Yeah, well done.
It's great for Esteban Gutierrez. Is that like the best race of his life?
Oh, it's his best result, and it's the best result for Sauber ever as well.
Yeah, so
but where have they come from? They've gone from 14th and 15th to 4th and 5th regularly. Like, what have they done?
I don't know. There's something about the way that car just sticks to the road. Like, it just gets unbelievable traction out of the corners. And it's quick. Like, it's quick down the straights as well.
But so even Hülkenberg, like, I mean, he missed out on the Ferrari drive, but, I mean, he's beating them on the track in his Sauber. This is nuts.
Exactly. Imagine what I could do in a Lotus Renault next year.
Oh, let's dare to dream.
I'm dreaming right now. I'm daring.
What did you have about the podium? You were dreaming about the podium.
I had that Webber just disappeared and then came back and then looked so relaxed.
Yeah, you tweeted this, how he was just like, I can't stand next to Vettel because I'm just over here having a stretch.
Just do these leg stretches.
Just stretch it out. Just do some lunges.
Check the tensile pressure on these wires.
It's not because I'm going to punch Vettel. I just have to stand away from arm's length of him. That's all.
Yeah, but then, as you said, juxtaposition. Pops of champagne, happiest man literally in the world.
It's the happiest I've seen him for years, probably since his last victory. So, I mean, he like I say, all the conspiracy aside, all the talk of, oh, maybe they screwed up my pit strategy or whatever, he was super rapt to get a second.
Exactly.
It was like a victory, really.
And he obviously well-loved there, got big claps, didn't seem upset you know, sort of after that, after Eddie Jordan had really spoken to him, he just seemed like, you know, he just is turning up when he wants to and racing great races. And
yeah,
he's taking it as he comes.
You know, for the first race out of the last three, his car hasn't ended up in flames.
Yeah, exactly. He was happy to finish.
So he'll be glad that he didn't end, you know, at 500 degrees Fahrenheit.
You got anything else you want to point out during the race?
I think we covered most of it. I mean, there was a moment where the two McLarens were fighting. That was pretty fun. But nice, yeah, clean, nice, good, hard racing. Like, I think the days of Perez being a mental case have gone. I think he's really turned it around. He went super quiet for a long time, but now he's back. But he's calm and he's cool and collected.
Yeah, and I think that we're just starting to see that. Formula One drivers have to go through that molding process of being like, okay, you had a couple of good races. Now you're at a better team. They try really, really hard to show that they're meant to be there. And so bad things happen, and then they go really quiet and stay under the radar, and then their skill starts to come to the fore again. I think we should write that up as a flowchart.
And then there was Alonso and Massa. So
yeah, that was the other point I was going to make.
I think someone said that Massa was given a team order to help Alonso, and he disobeyed it. And then Ferrari came out in their magnanimity. They were magnanimous, and they said, "Oh look, we're not mad at Massa for ignoring our message." It's like, well, yeah, what are you going to do about it?
You can't be mad about him because you fucking sacked him.
Keep him back and make him write lines after school. Like, I mean, exactly. You sacked him. What? Why are you even giving him a message? Like, he's not going to obey.
Yeah, just tell him when to come to the pits. That's all you need to do.
That's what you're there for.
Yeah, exactly. So, lame. But it was a good pass from Alonso to get Massa.
So, yeah, I mean, we all sort of knew that was going to happen, but it just didn't happen as easily as it has last few years. But that was how I saw Japan. That's my Japan experience all wrapped up.
Yeah, and maybe we'll go to the Japan Grand Prix one year. I think it'd be pretty fun. It'd
be so good. But while we're speaking about Japan, I've got a nice little super quiz. I hope you're ready.
I'm ready. I'm ready for the super quiz.
Have you been taking your smart pills?
I've been taking my smart pills. I'm wearing my my thinking cap.
Lovely.
My thinking helmet.
This week's super quiz, it's in honor of the Japanese Grand Prix, and it's called Dude, Don't Eat That.
Dude, don't eat that.
So we've done a quiz like this before with Vettel's car or a burlesque star. This one is whether you can tell the difference between a Japanese driver or a Japanese dish.
Oh, man.
Are you all over Japanese cuisine? I've
definitely eaten it in the past.
Yes, fantastic. I'm going to say a bunch of words. I've got 10, nice and quick. You say whether it's an ex-Japanese... No, a Japanese ex-F1 driver.
An ex-Japanese food? a retired Japanese dish.
This is an ex-parrot. a Japanese dish or an ex-Formula One driver. How are you feeling? Ready to go?
Great.
First one. This one's pretty tough. Kobayashi. Is that a food or a driver?
Driver.
That's a driver. Everybody knows this guy. 60 races, and he was on the podium last year in Japan. What a champion.
What a champion. Bring it back.
Next one. Kuwashima.
Oh, food.
Kuwashima. No, that one's a driver. But I don't blame you for not knowing that guy. He only raced in one race in 1976. So that was a tough one. But that's to make up for the first one being so easy.
12 years away from big board.
The next one. Now, some of these, obviously, my pronunciation is going to suck balls, but this one, I've got Natto. N-A-T-T-O.
Double T. I'm going to say driver.
No, wrong again. That one is a food. That one is fermented soybeans that smell like dirty socks.
Oh, delicious.
Delicious.
Yeah.
Keep on going. The next one is mochi. M-O-C-H-I. Mochi.
That's a food.
That one is a food. That one.
Yes.
Do you know what that one is?
Sounds like a dessert.
Kind of. It's a chewy rice cake. It's usually served on New Year's Day, and it's a very common cause of choking.
Oh, we'll see. Yeah, it's definitely my kind of dessert.
Happy New Year's, unless you choke, and then in which case, you know,
you get your just desserts.
Yeah. Oh boy. next one. I've got Yamamoto.
That sounds like a driver.
It does, right? Because it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Seikon Yamamoto. Yeah. He's actually pretty recent. He raced between 2006 and 2010. Not very notable, though. He drove for HRT, and he got lapped once by Bruno Senna. So
okay,
when you're a backmarker and you're getting lapped by your teammate, that's pretty bad.
Yeah, well, no wonder he's hung around. That name rings a bell. So
yeah.
Maybe because his short name was Yam.
Delicious yams. The next one I've got is Inago. I-N-A-G-O.
Yes, I'm pretty sure that's a food.
That's a food. Have a guess what it is.
Do I buy it at the sushi shop?
Oh, no, not quite. That is little brown crickets. They kind of resemble cockroaches.
Ooh.
So, yum, yum, yum.
No, thank you.
The next one I've got is Niboshi. N-I-B-O-S-H-I. Niboshi.
Food, again.
Yeah, food. This time, I mean, this is the one you were thinking of. This one is dried salted anchovies.
Okay, that's what I was thinking of.
They serve this one at the movies instead of popcorn. You go and get some niboshi and it's anchovies.
Oh, okay. I kind of just think delicious. Salty, chewy.
I'm actually kind of into that.
Yeah, okay. That would be good. Let's go. Let's try it. Let's do it at home. We'll do that one time. See if they let us take them in.
The next one is Katayama. K-A-T-A-Y-A-M-A. Katayama.
Sounds like a name for a driver.
It is a driver.
I'm running hot.
Ukio Katayama. He drove in 97 Grand Prix in the 90s.
Wow.
And he had a crash. Oh, no, hang on. Senna had a crash. And after the crash, they changed the regulations for the cockpits and made them higher. And then that pretty much ended his Formula One career. For some reason, it was too high and he couldn't see, or I don't even know. But that was the note that was on Wikipedia.
That sucks. Oh, he was too tall.
You have to go to the movies and have some niboshi to calm down.
Yeah, maybe take your bud Yamamoto.
Take your mate Nato. He smells like dirty socks.
Oh, God.
The next one I've got is Takagi. T-A-K-A-G-I. Takagi.
Sounds like a food.
No, not this time. Oh, no. Man. 1988, 1999. Turanosuke Takagi. That's horrible. He finished in the top 10 four times, and he was driving for Arrows in Tyrrell. They were rubbish.
Oh, man. Nice work.
So he must have had some miraculous drives.
Yeah, exactly.
But we're up to the last one. So this is where it's triple or nothing. You can win it all from here.
Thank God.
Mozuku. M-O-Z-U-K-U.
I'm going to say driver.
No, you lost it all. You lost it all. That one is it's a stringy seaweed, which is often compared to the look and feel of hair pulled from a shower drain.
That sounds like the worst.
Yeah, I know.
Please do not give it to me.
Imagine that on a plate. They're like, no, you can eat that. Like, no, thanks.
No,
I'm okay.
Just pull that out of the drain.
No, I'm good. Can I have one of those chewy rice cakes that make you choke instead?
Yes, please. Can I
have one of those choke cakes?
Can I have some of that popcorn? Popcorn fish, please.
I'd like just some fish, please. Can I have some dirty socks? I'll just chew on one rather than this garbage.
This looks like hair. No, thank you.
That's the race. I still reckon you did really, really well.
What, I get 6 out of 10 or something? 5 out of 10? Oh,
yeah, of course. Yeah. Absolutely.
You don't know. No. All right, Rod. Are you ready? I have a really special quiz tonight. Ooh. Now you know that when we first started, I was pretty big on making my quizzes rhyme, right?
Yeah, I remember that.
Now, what kind of rhyming is Japan famous for?
Rhyming. Is this like a haiku or something?
You got it all wrong. Yes, definitely it's a haiku, but there's no rhyming in haikus, Rod. I thought you'd pick me up on this, but yes, it is haikus tonight.
This is your intro. This is your quiz. And you're like, what rhymes? I'm like, I think you mean a haiku, but that doesn't rhyme. Well done.
Hey, look, I'm not the quiz master here. I'm the quiz apprentice. Okay, I have three haikus for you that I have written before the podcast. I've got like three haikus. They are about three different drivers. Ooh. You just have to identify the driver at the end of the haiku.
Okay.
It's called the haikuiz.
Oh, high quiz.
Yeah, high quiz. Not high quiz. The super high quiz.
What a quiz, Mark.
All right. You got to be serious for these quizzes, right? Otherwise,
they
won't come
off
right.
I take this very seriously.
Yeah, right, you do. Okay, are you ready?
Yes.
Now, remember, they're 5 syllables, 7 syllables, 5 syllables, so I've got them all correct. But if anybody wants to email us and tell me I've got them wrong, don't.
And of course, according to the rules of haiku, you'll mention which season it is, right?
Not which season, but it's definitely seasonal.
Oh, okay.
Or it's F1 definitely season. It's definitely nature-y.
Oh, lovely.
So here we go. To start us off.
Yeah.
Here we go. An old hope returns as midday turns to twilight, might turn ice to fire. Who am I talking about?
Oh. Now hang on a second.
If you need me to say it again. An old hope again. An old hope returns as midday turns to twilight, might turn ice to fire.
So my guess is Kimi Räikkönen.
You are spot on. I loved that line.
The old hope. I was going to go for Michael Schumacher, The Old Hope Returns, because he retired and came back. But then the Iceman, they gave it away.
Now, these are all current. Don't worry. They're all current.
Well, Iceman, I like that one. That was great.
So how'd you think? It was good?
That was really good.
Have I got a... should I quit my job and become a haiku
I didn't mean
guy?
To sound surprised when I said that was really good. Your quizzes are always great. But I really enjoy it. I mean, this one's on the ball. This one's great.
Good. All right. Here we go. What's haiku next? Number two. Haiku two. All right. The overnight storm found calm in the rising sun. He must shine next year. Do you want it again?
Yes.
Here we go. The overnight storm found calm. So the overnight storm.
Yeah.
Found calm in the rising sun.
Okay.
He must shine next year.
Well, my guess is going to be Hamilton.
Oh, no.
No?
No, found calm in the rising sun. Come on now.
Yeah, rising sun, isn't that... What's the land of the rising sun? That's Japan. So yeah, who... Well,
he wasn't calm. He was gone.
He found calm because he crashed out.
Okay, if that's how you want to interpret that.
That was my thinking.
All right. Well, do you want another go?
What was the answer?
It was Romain Grosjean. He must shine next year because he's going to be the number one driver.
Was
the overnight storm, man. You remember how his whole career he's been all... He came up quick and then he was crashing into everybody.
Like a violent storm.
Storm, exactly. Sorry, absolutely. I should have been more descriptive with my...
Hey, no.
Oh, all right, are you ready for the last one?
Yeah.
This one, simpler. Hopefully you get it. We've talked about it a little bit. God, man. You should definitely get this one. All right.
Bring it.
The towering oak has moved to let the sun shine on a smaller tree.
The towering oak has moved
to let the sun shine on a smaller tree.
Weber.
Yes. Great work.
I was like, it's going to be a tall guy because he moved out of the sport to let the sun shine on Daniel Ricciardo.
Yes.
It was a driver that moved. I was thinking Ricciardo initially, but I had to, you know, it paid to think about it for 3 more seconds.
Yes, and you got that he was tall. He's like the tallest man in Formula One.
Well, I was thinking someone who's like too tall. Who gets penalized for being too tall? And that's why I was thinking Ricciardo maybe, but no. My little reptile brain just got ticking away and I finally pulled it out.
So great job. 2 out of 3.
Man, that was amazing. That was good.
I was going to change it before we get on. The last line is on a smaller tree. Let the sun shine on a smaller tree. I was going to put let the sun shine on a wider tree.
On a tree with a fat ass.
Yeah, on a tree with huge hips. But
on a smiley tree.
But I thought, I think smaller, just because he is smaller and, you know, he's got to grow and all that type of stuff. You know, I was really trying to channel nature.
He's smaller in stature.
Cool. Great job.
Cool. That was so great.
It was either that. You know what? I'm going to make you feel bad here. Because there was 2 choices for quizzes this week. I was going to go the haikus, which I ran by some friends, and they were like, it's going to be really hard to do. And I was like, And
then my other one... these friends? I don't know if I trust your friends. Every time they get involved, it all goes pear-shaped.
It goes pear-shaped. Exactly. So I ignored them. But my other quiz choice was to go back through the ages and get all these Formula One games and get you to tell me what... console, what system they were on, because you know, Japan, Japan, home of the video game consoles made by Sony and other people.
That's the problem. Japan has like three.
Exactly. So there are some funny, funny named Formula One games, but I'll save it for next year.
I think I kind of get what you mean, but it does seem a little bit
convoluted.
High concept.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas haikus, not high concept at all. Not cultured in any way.
Instead.
Yeah. That's right.
That coup is the exact right height. So thanks very much.
good. All right. Let's spray drink and drop. Oh, no, we've got to make predictions.
Oh, we need to do predictions for next race. The next race is India. It's in 2 weeks. We've just had 2 races in a row, a flyaway round. We've got another flyaway round, India, then Abu Dhabi. And then there's only 2 more races left.
I believe it's called Abu Dhabi.
Abu Dhabi. India. So the India track, this is one of those tracks where it's like a straight, then a hairpin, then a straight, then a hairpin. It gets a bit kind of like repetitive.
Mm.
Pretty high downforce. And I'll have you know that the altitude there can reach up to 194 metres AMSL, whatever the fuck that is.
AMSL, you know.
Oh, AMSL. Yeah, of course. That's on the AMSL rating.
Yeah, AMSL and Gretel.
It was invented by Stephen AMSL.
Yeah, exactly.
So whatever that altitude thing means, that's pretty good.
That famous driver, Nigel Ansell.
Nigel Ansell. And you reckon you don't know any old drivers. Keeping that one in your pocket. So look, you know, do we even need to say who you think is going to take pole and take the win?
Well, we do need to after last week. Webber took pole. So what are you going to do?
So obviously this week, it's going to be Vettel.
I'm going to change it up this week.
It's your turn. I took change up last week. I'm going to go Vettel for pole. Who are you going for pole?
I'm going to go for Webber for pole. He's going to back-to-back.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Cracky Moses.
Fool me once, Jingos. Shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on you.
You're going to be worst. So mad next week, remember, Telltale's Poll.
When you get everything right and I'm going to get it all wrong.
All right, well, I'm going to say the Telltale's Poll. You're going to say Weber. And given that, who is going to take the victory?
Seb.
And the championship, maybe? Yeah, Seb, of course.
And the championship, yes.
Vatel, Vatel. Now, here's the real meat. Here's the real gold. Who's going to take P-10?
This is tough. I think, you know what?
Yeah.
It's going to be Jev.
Jev.
Yeah. Our old mate Jev. He's going to have his best finishes for the season.
Huh.
Yeah.
That guy. I remember that guy.
Jean-Éric Vernet.
Jev.
Yeah.
Jev. I need to pick someone, don't I?
Eventually, yeah. From basically, trick. You can look at this week's positions, yep. Just anywhere between, I don't know, 6th and I'm going to say 17th. Yeah. One of those guys.
I know who I'm going to go. I'm going to tempt fate. I'm going to go for Paul DeResta.
Oh, man. He is going to crash now.
He's not. That's the thing. He's
definitely going to crash now.
No way.
No, he's going to drive into someone and he's going to take out someone else. And
he's
going to
drive into 10 people.
You know what? We haven't had one of those big cataclysmic starts in a while. It'll be DeResta. He's going to go into the first corner and take out 4 guys.
Well, either way, that's a victory for me, I reckon, because I'll be happy that there was a massive crash. And if he takes 10th, I'll be even more happy.
All right. Well, I'm glad.
Well, there we go. That's our predictions done. Now you know altitude rating for the track. What else do you need to know?
And look, that's right. We've given you all the information you need.
It's all right
and if
there.
Anything, you've shown us that you're better predictors than us. So tweet us those predictions. Where can they tweet us?
You do that at the Twitter handle, which is the following letters. You need an at symbol first. And then an S, capital or lowercase. Doesn't really matter, I don't think.
No.
Followed by an Uber license pod.
Uber license pod.
Yeah, Uber license pod. With a U, not double O. That's crazy.
We're the @ Uber license pod.
With our super license pod.
Yeah, exactly.
So
can you email your predictions as well?
You can email predictions at superlicensepodcast@gmail.com. Get them in nice and early. Now, a few people are leaving it till the last minute or forgetting, even worse. You guys can do better. Come on.
Yeah, look, you know what happens when you leave things to the last minute? It happens in qualifying all the time. People leave it to the last minute. They go out, they come in, they haven't set their fastest time. So what you need to do is get in like 2 days early. Because you know what happens when you get in 2 days early? It means you got balls, man.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we want to see your predictions before practice. Because
I want to see you predict for India next year.
Yeah, exactly. Just send us any predictions. And you know what? I really want to encourage people. It takes 4 seconds. Yep. Like Rod described last time, you whip out your phone, you open up the Voice Memos app or the Notes app, whatever the hell you use on your Galaxy Note 3, and you hit record and you email that to us and we put it in the show. You'll be the first other person in the show.
We will totally do that. Imagine that.
Hey, Rod.
Hey, Zach.
You know what I had that I didn't? I forgot to bring the podcast, but now I've got it in front of me.
What's this?
I've got some technical information for you. Did you want to hear it?
Oh, yeah, I guess.
Now, you know how last week we were saying that the Red Bulls seem really, really quick out of the corners?
Oh, yeah,
and
I did.
Seb seems really, really quick, right? Now, there's been some talk about traction control and these types of things. Yep. So my friend Chris Emerson, the technical expert, who's been tweeting at us a couple of times and telling us predictions, he texted me and said, this is what Red Bull's traction control is, even though it's not traction control.
Holy smokes. I mean, I hope that people didn't just stop the podcast after the quiz or something, because this is the gold right here.
This is it, right? So the engine mapping shuts down cylinders in early gears when initially accelerating out of slow corners, and this modulates power and avoids wheel spin. So what that means is that Seb can, you know, put his foot down earlier and he won't get all the power from the cylinders delivered to the wheels. You're going to get some. So he can be more liberal with his throttle use and reduce the amount of wheel spin he gets.
Reducing the traction, you might say. Controlling it even.
Controlling a little bit. So engine mapping like this, Chris followed up with a secondary text message, is perfectly legal. So
I wonder
Adrian
if that's what Sauber's done as well.
It could be. But I mean, it's... why not, hey?
Oh, if you can do it, absolutely, why not?
If you can do it. If you're a mega master criminal mind like Adrian Newey, you know, make it happen.
Better luck to you if you can do it.
Technical news from our mate.
Yeah, I reckon maybe next year he does like a Chris's Minute or something before every track and gives us a little technical breakdown or something.
Oh, man, I'd love that.
I'm sure he would love that.
I'm sure he would love that. I'll get in contact with him. Or you know what? I'm doing it right now. Chris, I'm getting in contact with you via the podcast. This is the only way we talk to each other. Record me a minute of technical information and email it to me. Or I'll come around and record it for you.
Yeah, whatever you want.
Yeah.
But thank you for that information. That's amazing.
Yeah, really cool. And it made sense. Like, you put it in words I understand.
Put it in words that we could read out on the podcast for people to listen to on iTunes or Stitcher.
Yeah, Stitch us up on Stitcher.
What a great segue. If you're on Stitcher, don't forget to give us a nice big blue thumb, a big Smurfy thumb. Mm. If you're on the iTunes, you want to give us a nice little rating or a review. We've still got magnets and cards and things that we're going to send out to people. So if you give us a nice little rating, we will sort you out with some stuff.
Exactly. And I'm planning on drawing on them tomorrow. So watch out.
Oh, boy. I better email you people who wanted stuff and their address and stuff.
I can probably check the email as well. So.
And then they'll have to check their letterbox for our cool stuff.
Or their PO boxes because they're hiding their identity.
True. Now, don't forget also, guys, that we did a Korean podcast, but we also did a Rush podcast. So it should have come up in your podcast feed. But you know how sometimes iTunes does that thing where it just gets the most recent episode? Yeah. So if that's happened to you, you don't want to miss that. There should be a Korean episode and a Rush episode and now a Japanese episode. We don't want you to miss out on any of the Super License goodness. There's only going to be 4 more episodes for the rest of the year. So,
oh man, don't say it like that. That makes me feel sad. We don't get to talk to each other outside of podcasts.
Well, yeah, I don't know what we're going to do in the off season. I mean, it might be nice to have a few weeks where we don't do something. Or maybe if we really get into Formula E or something, we might do a few special episodes or something.
Maybe we can
see how we feel.
Let's get into a really niche racing.
Like the Birdman Rally?
Yep, that's it. Follow it around
the
world.
Once a year, but that's okay.
Yeah, well, we can stretch that out over 4 podcasts, over 8 weeks.
For sure.
Or we could just start working really hard and saving for our paddock passes for Melbourne.
Oh, but one of our listeners is going to sort us out with one, remember?
Oh, God, I hope so.
Please do that,
and,
guys.
Yep, so keep retweeting, keep leaving reviews. We will see you soon, right?
It's a couple of weeks. Get your predictions in.
Yeah.
We will see you then. I've been Rod.
I've been Zach.
And we're going to say goodbye.
Bye-bye.
See you later. Hello, good evening, and welcome to the Super License F1 podcast. I'm Rodney. I'm super excited. The audio is not so great tonight, but that's okay. Let's just plow straight on through. How you going, Zach? Nah, lost a lot of you there. Could not hear what you just said, but I'm sure it was great. Yeah. Well, it's thrown me a little bit, but yeah, welcome to the Japanese Grand Prix weekend. It was it was a pretty good race. I thought it was another one of those races where it was in our time. It was in normal time.
What can I do? Diddly doodly 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 hoodly 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 gobble 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 gobble.
Ended. Oh, fuck.